Okay, well, welcome back. We left off last week at the end of 17 with Paul in Athens. And we read about how there are a man named Dionysius and an Areopagite and a woman named Damaris came to Jesus. And that's where we stopped. So we'll pick up right there with Paul in Corinth. Let me start this with a cool little quote from J.C. Ryle. This is from our commentary by R. Kent Hughes. It says this: "The greatest description of Christian zeal that I know of was given by the famous 19th century Anglican bishop J.C. Ryle in his book, Practical Religion. Quote, "A zealous man in religion is preeminently a man of one thing. It is not enough to say that he is earnest, hearty, uncompromising, thoroughgoing, wholehearted, or fervent in spirit. He only sees one thing. He cares for one thing. He lives for one thing. He is swallowed up in one thing, and that one thing is to please God. Whether he lives or whether he dies, whether he has health or whether he has sickness, whether he is rich or whether he is poor, whether he pleases man or whether he gives offense, whether he is thought wise or whether he is thought foolish, whether he gets blame or whether he gets praise, whether he gets honor or whether he gets shame, for all this, the zealous man cares nothing at all. He burns for one thing, and that one thing is to please God and to advance God's glory. If he is consumed in the very burning, he cares not for it. He is content. He feels that, like a lamp, he is made to burn. And if consumed in the burning, he has but done the work for which God appointed him. This is what I mean when I speak of zeal in religion." That's from J.C. Ryle. Paul was such a man, and he made a brilliant contrast to the pagan philosophers of Athens with their studied philosophical detachment. For a man like Paul, burning with prophetic unction, smug complacency in his hearers was too much to bear. So he left Athens in search of more receptive fields. So eager was Paul to get out of Athens that he did not even wait for Silas and Timothy, who were then en route. Paul must have felt at least a little dejected as he walked the 50 miles to Corinth. Since coming to Europe, he had suffered a terrible beating in Philippi, civil rejection in Thessalonica and in Berea, and indifference in Athens. So first thing we need to do is clear up this deal about Timothy and Silas, where he says Paul left Athens without waiting for them because they were still en route. Remember when he left Berea and when he arrived in Athens, he said, "Send Silas and Timothy to me." Right? They had stayed back. And his last command was, "Tell them to come to me in Athens." Okay. And in Acts, it goes on. It never says that Timothy and Silas arrived in Athens. It just says he left and went to Corinth. But let me read MacArthur's note about this. "As Paul desired, Silas and Timothy joined him in Athens. And then from there, he sent Timothy back to Thessalonica. And then Paul evidently sent Silas somewhere in Macedonia, possibly Philippi, since he returned to Corinth from that province." So even though Luke doesn't record that Paul and Silas arrived in Athens, if you go look at the letters, then you can see that they were there in Athens with him. And but we'll look at that when we come to it. So let's talk about Corinth. Remember I said that where Athens was like Oxford, Corinth is like London. Huge metropolis, the center of trade and power, and that's where all the action was in this province or in Greece. So Corinth is kind of like Sin City. I mean, it's a very hedonistic place. There's a lot of pagan worship going on here. It's a huge city. We all know how cities are. It's no different today than it is back then. The cities is where everything's happening, right? And so they had a temple to Aphrodite there. We'll just read this note from MacArthur about that too. Corinth, let's see, the leading political and commercial center in Greece. It was located at a strategic point on the Isthmus of Corinth, which connected the Peloponnesian Peninsula with the rest of Greece. Virtually all traffic between northern and southern Greece had to pass through Corinth. Because Corinth was a trade center and host to all sorts of travelers, it had an unsettled population that was extremely debauched. It also housed the Temple of Aphrodite, the goddess of love. So 1,000 temple priestesses, who were actually ritual prostitutes, came each evening into the city to practice their trade. So every day, these 1,000 priestesses would hit the city. And like anything you wanted to buy could be found in Corinth if you had the money to pay for it, including women, whatever. So Corinth was basically the Vanity Fair of the ancient world. You know, the Vanity Fair in the Pilgrim's Progress, party all the time, you know, pagan rituals, pagan worship. If you wanted it, it was there to have if you had the money to pay for it. And so this is where Paul arrives. So a few things about this stay in Corinth. So Paul's going to end up staying here for a little while. He writes 1st and 2nd Corinthians while he's here during this stay we're about to talk about. We're also going to see a real good time stamp that lets us know a really good close idea of when this is taking place. And so let's just start reading it at 18. So this, after these things, these are the things that went down in Athens. He left Athens and went to Corinth. What did he say? That was about a 50-mile walk, didn't he say? Yeah, about 50 miles from Athens to Corinth. And he found a Jew named Aquila, a native of Pontus, having recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla. Because Claudius had commanded all the Jews to leave Rome. So I think we've talked about this before. There's our timestamp. Well, we know that this order went out from Claudius in 49 AD. So there's a solid boom. We know right where we are here. It's somewhere around 49. We don't know how long after the proclamation went out here, but we, you know, most scholars assume it was within a year. So we're 49 or 50 right here, 49 or 50 AD. So he came to them, and because he was of the same trade, he stayed with them, and they were working. For by trade, they were tent makers. And he was reasoning in the synagogue every Sabbath and trying to persuade both Jew and Greek. So, Paul arrives here, and first thing he does, he finds some new friends, and he finds some work. Because Paul, he's having to provide for himself. And so he comes in here, he meets Priscilla and Aquila. Good thing, he has a place to stay. He's got some work, a way to provide for himself. But every Sunday, you know, he's in the synagogue trying to convince the Jews and the Greeks that Jesus is the Christ. Okay, so next, we see Timothy and Silas arrive. So, but when Silas and Timothy came down from Macedonia, Paul began devoting himself completely to the word, solemnly testifying to the Jews that Jesus was the Christ. So, let's just talk about Paul's when he arrives here. You know, he's been harried. From city to city, he's been under lots of stress, and I could imagine he's getting tired, and he's just beat down. But some good things happen here. You know, he makes some friends, he finds a way to support himself. Then Silas and Timothy arrive, And he says Paul began devoting himself completely to the word. Now that's because if we go back and if we look in some of the letters, they brought good news from Thessalonica. So we'll look at that. We're going to look at some stuff, do a little Bible aerobics. So go to 1 Thessalonians 3, verse 6, and we'll see. He got some good news here, which Paul needed some good news. First Thessalonians 3:6. We'll start at 5. For this reason, when I could endure it no longer, I also sent to find out about your faith. So there you go right there. That's where he's sending back. For fear that the tempter might have tempted you and our labor would be in vain. But now that Timothy has come to us from you and has brought us good news of your faith and love, and that you always think kindly of us, longing to see us just as we also long to see you. So this is this event we're looking at right now. That's what he's talking about. So he sent Timothy to Thessalonica. Go find out what's going on back there. You know, they had come through there. He sent him, tell him, go back and check on them. And so there you see, he brings them good news. He's brought us good news of your faith and love, and that you always think kindly of us, longing to see us just as we also long to see you. For this reason, brethren, in all our distress and affliction, we were comforted about you through your faith. For now, we really live if you stand firm in the Lord. So there's, he got some good news. And he also received a missionary offering from Philippi. We see that in 2 Corinthians 11. Go to 2 Corinthians 11. So we're going to, as we go through here, we're just going to look back to these letters and kind of confirm what Luke is saying here. Okay. So that little passage we just read kind of confirms that Timothy did come to Athens and then Paul sent him back to Thessalonica is what he says there about how I sent you back. I can endure it no longer. I sent to find out about your faith. Okay. So where's our next one? 2 Corinthians 11. There is no 2 Corinthians 11. What am I doing here? Oh, I'm in Thessalonians. Sorry. All right, 2 Corinthians 11:9. We'll just start here at 2. Now I praise you. No, I'm in 1 Corinthians. Sorry. Just give me a second. Sure, I'm in the right place here. Okay, we'll start in 7. Paul writing to the Corinthians, writing back to them. Okay, he's in Corinth when he writes this letter. Okay, he's came to Corinth. He's writing back to the Corinthians. He says, or did I commit a sin in humbling myself so that you might be exalted because I preached the gospel of God to you without charge? I robbed other churches by taking wages from them to serve you. And when I was present with you and was in need, I was not a burden to anyone. For when the brethren came from Macedonia, they fully supplied my need. And in everything, I kept myself from being a burden to you. Okay, I'm sorry. This is not him. This is a letter to the Corinthians. So he's recalling this time when Silas arrived from Philippi with this offering. Okay. He said, I was not a burden to anyone, for when the brethren came from Macedonia, they fully supplied my need. And in everything, I kept myself from being a burden to you and will continue to do so. So there's an explanation there why Paul, back in Acts, he was only reasoning in the synagogue on the Sabbath because he had to work all the rest of the week. But when Silas arrived from Philippi with this offering, well, now he's free to have full-time ministry. So some good things, things are finally going right for Paul. You know, he gets there, he makes friends, he finds work. Then Timothy arrives with good news from Thessalonica. Silas arrives from Philippi with this offering from the church to supply his needs. So now he no longer has to work. He can devote himself to full-time ministry. Okay. So that's what we see happening there. When it says Paul began devoting himself completely to the word, that's because he now has support. And he's solemnly testifying to the Jews that Jesus was the Christ. But when they resisted and blasphemed, he shook out his garments and said to them, your blood be on your own heads. I am clean. From now on, I will go to the Gentiles. So that's pretty straightforward. They did what the Jews normally do. They don't like this whole thing about Christianity. And he basically says, whatever, man, I gave you the message. You reject it. My hands are clean. Your blood's not on my hands. So then he left there and went to the house of a man named Titius Justus, a worshiper of God, whose house was next to the synagogue. So this guy, he says he's a Gentile who showed interest in the God of Israel and was associated with the synagogue next door. So he lived right next door to the synagogue. His name indicates that he was a Roman. And since Romans usually had three names, this may have been Gaius Titius Justus, meaning that he was the same Gaius mentioned in Romans 16:23 and 1 Corinthians 1:14. We'll look at that, I think, in a bit. But I will look at that now. 1 Corinthians 1:14. So when he's writing this letter, there's this deal going on about some people are saying, I'm of Apollos and I'm of Paul. And there's this, you know, Corinthian church had a lot of issues going on. So he's trying to correct this. And he says, now I mean this, that each one of you is saying, I am of Paul and I am of Apollos and I am of Cephas and I am of Christ. Has Christ been divided? Paul was not crucified for you, was he? Or were you baptized in the name of Paul? I thank God that I baptized none of you except Crispus and Gaius, so that no one would say you were baptized in my name. So if we go back to Acts, we see right after this, he talks about this guy, Titius Justus, who most likely is this man Gaius he's referring to. In verse 8, he says, Crispus, the leader of the synagogue, believed in the Lord with all his household, and many of the Corinthians, when they heard, were believing and being baptized. So he references Crispus over here in 1 Corinthians, along with this person, Gaius, who we think is this guy who lived right next to the synagogue. But these are the only two people he personally baptized in Corinth. And so this guy, Crispus, he says he's a leader of the synagogue. Dr. David says, this is not a rabbi. This is like an administrator. Each synagogue had like a president, like a person that's over the synagogue, not a teacher, just an administrator. They would make sure the rabbis had all what they needed, you know, parchment and ink and quills, and they would handle their correspondence between the different synagogues and stuff like that. He says this, he thinks that's what this guy is. May or maybe not be. He could have been an administrator or a rabbi. But according to this guy, he said that was the normal thing in the synagogue. He said even to this day, every synagogue has a what they call a president kind of the over the synagogue. So that's who this guy Crispus is. So Paul's had some good stuff happen. Like I said, he met people and had work. Then he got this offering from the church at Philippi so he could do full time. And now he's getting some people are coming to Christ. You know, this guy, Titius Justus, and now Crispus, who is the leader of the synagogue. He has believed in the Lord with all his household. So some good things are happening. And in verse 9 it says, "And the Lord said to Paul in the night by a vision, 'Do not be afraid any longer, but go on speaking and do not be silent, for I am with you. And no man will attack you in order to harm you, for I have many people in this city.' And he settled there a year and 6 months, teaching the word of God among them." So this is the third vision Paul receives in the book of Acts. He gets six total. This is the third of six. So we're seeing the Lord is ministering to Paul in this vision. Now why? Some good stuff is happening, right? He's received good news. He's received some physical support from the other churches of Macedonia. Some people are coming to faith. You know, good things are happening, but yet Paul is still, the first thing the Lord tells him is do not be afraid any longer. So I think it's because Paul had been under, you know, extreme stress for a long time. And he might have been losing his ability to rebound. You know, he's just, you know how long periods of stress. I mean, Paul is just a human. You know, he's not supernatural. He suffers from the effects of stress just like anybody else does. He's had a hard go of it in Europe. And so it appears like he needs a break. You know, he needs to take some time to recover his strength and just have a break. So he'd been under extreme stress for quite some time. So look at 1 Corinthians 2:1. And we'll see where he talks about that. When he's writing to him, he's telling them kind of how he was feeling when he arrived there, right here where we are. When he arrives in Corinth, he says, "When I came to you, brethren, I did not come with superiority of speech or of wisdom, proclaiming to you the testimony of God. For I determined to know nothing among you except Jesus Christ and him crucified." And here he says, "I was with you in weakness and in fear and in much trembling. And my message and my preaching were not in persuasive words of wisdom, but in demonstration of the Spirit and of power." So he's telling right there, when I got there, man, I was in a bad way. You know, I was in much fear and trembling. So the Lord comes to him in this vision. He's going to minister to Paul. And so his first thing he says is, "Paul, do not fear." He's going to tell him three things. "Paul, you need to stand up, speak up, and don't give up." Okay? That's basically the essence of this vision. The Lord said to Paul in the night by a vision, "Do not be afraid any longer, but go on speaking. Do not be silent." So there he says, right there, he says, don't fear, stand up. Speak and do not be silent. Speak up. He says, "Don't give up, for I am with you. For I am with you, and no man will attack you in order to harm you." That doesn't mean he won't get any attacks, but nobody's going to stone him or beat him or flog him or anything like that. He basically says, I've got you. I'm going to keep you safe here. So he settled there for a year and 6 months, teaching the word of God among them. So for 18 months, Paul stays here in this city. He basically, for Paul, this is like putting down roots. Like I said, while he's here, this is when he writes 1st and 2nd Thessalonians. So let's just think about what's going on. He's here 18 months. He's teaching and preaching full time because he's got support from the other churches. He would be sending messengers back and forth, you know, to Philippi, to Thessalonica. He's receiving correspondence through messengers. And so that's when he writes the two letters to Thessalonica to help them out in their time of trouble. And so, although Paul is here and he's having some success in his ministry, we've got to remember, you know, this was Corinth. Debauchery going on here. But Paul is never attacked. And he's not beaten or anything. Homosexuality is rampant here. You know, I think there was female and male prostitutes, you know, temple prostitutes. All kind of stuff going on here. But the Lord tells him, stand up, speak up, don't give up, for I'm with you. You're safe here. And so in verse 12, we see the religious freedom that these people, even though this was a Roman place, very secular place, but they were free. You know, they had freedom of worship. The Judaism was accepted most places. It was this new thing, what they thought it was an offshoot of Judaism, this new Christian faith, this new Messiah that everybody's following, that's turning the world upside down. So they bring Paul up to this guy, to this civil magistrate. So in verse 12, we see this. But while Gallio was proconsul of Achaia, so Achaia is the province that Corinth resides. Corinth is like the capital of this province, this Greek province. This guy Gallio, he's proconsul. That means he's like the governor. He's the governor of Achaia. So the Jews with one accord rose up against Paul and brought him before the judgment seat, saying, this man persuades men to worship God contrary to the law. So here's their deal. They're going to bring him before this judgment seat, which that's the Bema seat. There was one in every city where the judge or the proconsul would sit and hear cases, right? And he would give his judgments from this seat. So they drag Paul in front of this man. Of course, it's the Jews, always the Jews. They're so offended by Paul's message that Jesus is the Christ. And he hung on a tree and he died. They can't. That's just not okay with these people. They say, this man persuades men to worship God contrary to the law. But when Paul was about to open his mouth, Gallio said to the Jews, if it were a matter of wrong or a vicious crime, O Jews, it would be reasonable for me to put up with you. You kind of hear the sneering in the language, you know. He's like, these Jews again. Golly, man. What is it with you people? But if there are questions about words and names and your own law, look after it yourselves. I am unwilling to be a judge of these matters. So here we see God's providential protection on Paul. Even though the Jews are trying to stir up trouble, go to God say, I have many people in this city. He's sovereign over all things, so he's got Paul under his protection. So basically this guy's saying, okay, this is not a civil matter. This is a religious matter. This is, why are you bringing this to me? You know, if this was a matter of wrong or a vicious crime, oh, Jews, it would be reasonable for me to put up with you. To put up with you, he says. So basically, what he does here is he gives what we would call a summary judgment. Before he even hears the facts of the case, before Paul even opens his mouth to defend himself, he just says, okay, this is not for me to hear. Y'all can figure this out amongst yourselves. This is not a civil matter. Why are you bringing this to me? Oh, crazy Jews, basically is what he's saying. So, and he drove them away from the judgment seat. And they all took hold of Sosthenes, the leader of the synagogue, and began beating him in front of the judgment seat. But Gallio was not concerned about any of these things. So now we have a new leader of the synagogue. His name is Sosthenes. Apparently he took Crispus's place because when Crispus came to Christ, of course, he was removed as leader of the synagogue. They weren't going to have that. And when Crispus came to Christ, you know, he was a respected leader, and this would have sent shockwaves throughout the Jewish community. So they installed this guy Sosthenes, and he's the one who drags Paul in front of Gallio. And apparently he gets beat up. They took hold of Sosthenes, the leader of the synagogue, and began beating him in front of the judgment seat. But Gallio was not concerned about any of these things. So this Sosthenes eventually comes to Christ.
Why did they beat him? What was the point of that?
Here's a note from MacArthur. It says, the Greeks had reason for being hostile to Sosthenes. They were venting general hostility toward Jews on him, or they may have been angry with his unsuccessful attempt as leader of the Jews at prosecuting the case against Paul. Since he was the ruler of the synagogue, he would have presented the case to Gallio. So
they all... Isn't the Jews, that's Greeks.
No, yeah, this is just city people at the court, I guess. They're angry that he's bringing this case before the proconsul about this guy, Paul. They're all like, why are you doing this? Why are you jamming up our courts with this nonsense stuff? I mean, that's as good as an explanation as I got. They're just preventing general hostility toward Jews, or they may have been angry with his unsuccessful attempt at prosecuting the case against Paul.
Was he above, or at this point had he taken over?
At this point, Sosthenes is the leader of the synagogue. He had taken over after Crispus. Okay. As Crispus became a believer.
Okay.
So he was removed as leader. Sosthenes takes his place. Then they all get together and they bring Paul before this governor. And say, this man is trying to teach, you know, contrary to the law. And Gallio says, this is not a civil matter. Why are you even bringing this to me? You know there's going to be other Greeks here, like, you know, at the judgment seat, hearing the cases and stuff. And so they may have taken their cue from Gallio and his condescension toward the Jews, whatever the case may be. But they took hold of Sosthenes and began to beat him.
Thinking it was the Jews that beat their own ruler.
Yeah, that's what I was always thinking.
Because he would have been the Gallio drove them, which I thought was the Jews from the tribunal. And then the next one is
Let's just picture it. Let's see if we can picture it in our head. So here you got the judgment seat, which if I'm not mistaken was usually in a public square or marketplace, and it was an established place. This is where it was always, and that's where the proconsul would go to hear cases and make his judgments. All kind of people standing around here, and here comes Sosthenes, maybe four or five of his Jewish buddies, and they're dragging Paul up in front of the seat, and they say, this man is teaching to worship contrary to the law. And he's in the middle of a bunch of, I mean, this is Corinth. This is a huge city. I think there's like 200,000 people live here. That's huge for the ancient days. So there's all kind of Greeks. There's probably all kind of people here. It doesn't say, but I'm just imagining in my head the scene here. There's this huge crowd of people, with these few Jews up here trying to get Paul in trouble. And Gallio says, why are you bringing this in front of me? This is not even for me to hear. This is amongst yourselves. Y'all deal with this. And so apparently the crowd was enraged by this because, you know, they're not real fond of the Jews anyway. Anti-Semitism is not a new thing. Anti-Semitism has been around as long as there's been Semites. And so they beat Sosthenes up. And this guy Gallio, okay, whatever. You know, he don't even try to stop them.
So once they beat him, somebody else takes over?
No. But Sosthenes does eventually come to Christ. They just beat him up, I guess, and say, get out of here, you dirty Jew. Why are you doing all this in our courts? We don't have time for this. Kick you. Get out of here, filthy Jew. Yeah. I mean, that's what I was picturing in my head.
Yeah.
Bunch of Greeks saying, get out of here. We don't have time for your crazy religious stuff. You know, these are, all these people mostly worship Athena. Is that what I said? Is it Athena or somebody else?
Aphrodite.
Aphrodite, yeah. Anyway. So, you know, these are all pagans. They didn't want to hear this mess.
Yeah. They don't want nothing to do with religion.
Yeah. I mean, Gallio, he's a civil magistrate. He's this is not like Israel. It's not a theocracy here. So we can see here that he's saying, you're free to practice your religion if you want. That's fine. But work that out amongst yourselves. This is not a civil matter. So we're seeing kind of this division between religious matters and civil matters. So this goes all the way back. You know, remember, this is Greek. Although this is in Greece. Rome loved everything Greek. The Romans loved the Greeks. Greek philosophy, the Greek methods of governance, all this stuff. Everything was Greek, Greek, Greek. They were all Hellenized. And the Greeks is where this whole idea of a government structure that's separate from the religious structure. And so we see that right here. He's clearly stating, this is not a matter for me. This is a religious thing. You're free to worship however you want, but don't bring it to me. Don't expect me to make judgments concerning your religious practices. That's not my job. Okay. And so we see Sophonies is mentioned in the letter to the Corinthians, in 1 Corinthians 1:1, actually, right at the beginning of the letter. He mentioned Sophonies. I just think it's neat. We've seen this guy Justius, who probably is Gaius. We've seen Crispus, and now we've seen Sosthenes. All three of these men are mentioned in Paul's letter to the Corinthians. So he says, Paul, called as an apostle of Jesus Christ by the will of God, and Sosthenes, our brother. So Sosthenes is with him as he's writing this letter. 1:1. Where did he write this letter from?
It does mention in the notes here about how Sosthenes was beaten for bringing Paul before the civil court in Corinth.
Yeah.
Mine says he wrote it during the last year of his 3-year ministry at Ephesus.
He was at Ephesus when he wrote this letter, right?
That's what it
says. Yes, and Sosthenes is with him there. This is the same Sosthenes. Here's a little note from this introduction to the letter to the Corinthians. It says, the church in Corinth was founded by Paul on his second missionary journey. That's what we're studying now. As usual, his ministry began in the synagogue, where he was assisted by two Jewish believers, Priscilla and Aquila, with whom he lived for a while and who were fellow tradesmen. Soon after, Silas and Timothy joined them, and Paul began to preach even more intensely in the synagogue. When most of the Jews resisted the gospel, he left the synagogue, but not before Crispus, the leader of the synagogue, his family, and many other Corinthians were converted. We just read about that. And so he ministered there for a year and a half. So later, when he's in Ephesus, this would be probably on his third missionary journey, that's when he writes back to the Corinthians. And he mentions Sosthenes by name. It's the same guy who drug him before Gallio. So he comes to Christ later. That's not recorded in Acts. We don't actually see that, but we know from Corinthians that he did become a believer along with Crispus. And this guy, Gaius, he was most likely this Roman who lived right next to the synagogue. Okay? I just love the way all this stuff is, you know, you read it here, then it's confirmed over here, and you see it here, and it's, this guy's mentioned over here. And the way all this stuff intertwines, and you know, scholars for thousands of years have been studying all this, so It's just all there. But apparently most scholars believe that this guy that lived next to the synagogue is the man Gaius that Paul references in Corinthians. So, Paul enjoys his little break here. He gets an 18-month, he gets to stop, basically, for a while. He gets to just teach and preach. He's corresponding with the other churches. He's surrounded by friends. He's safe from harm. So, good time for Paul. You know, he needed this. He needed a break. And so, Paul, having remained many days longer, and, you know, that's like 18 months, that many days, he took leave of the brethren and put out to sea for Syria. And with him were Priscilla and Aquila. Notice how Priscilla is a lot of times is mentioned first. That's so unusual. Usually the man would always be mentioned first. So apparently Priscilla was pretty... she was pretty, important. And her and Aquila were pretty co-equal in their service, I would say, or whatever. But about half the time they're mentioned, Priscilla's mentioned first. And the other half, Aquila's mentioned first. And so in Cenchrea, however you say that, should we stop? Let's just stop right here. We'll pick up right here at verse 18. We'll try to figure out why Paul cuts his hair off. So that's a good place to stop. That's kind of the end of my notes anyway. And next week, we're going to see these conversions. This man Apollos, there's 12 Jewish disciples that Paul comes upon. This book has such a good kind of lesson on this, on what we see here. So a lot of our lesson next week is just going to be straight from this book, because it's just so much easier to read what he's written it instead of me trying to make notes.
But you're doing 19 next week?
Well, we'll pick up at 18, and we'll finish 18 and begin 19. We'll for sure get these two conversion experiences done. But what he does, this guy does kind of a case study here of conversion. And he does one through Apollos, and then one through these 12 disciples. And then there's one more case study for conversion that we'll look at next week. So, anything anybody want to say? Any questions there? I know I was kind of all over the place. Well, it would have to be supposition there, but
because he went and reasoned with the Jews right after that.
Later. Yeah, he does.
So he doesn't completely stop.
He's frustrated. He's tired. He's worn down. Yeah, he needs a sabbatical, I guess. He just needs some time to recharge. He's having trouble rebounding from all these events, and maybe he spoke hastily. You know, Paul's not perfect. We see that in several places.
Yeah, you see it in Romans later on. He says he pointed to his countrymen first.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's not like he stops preaching to the Jews after this. The very next, I'd say he's probably just frustrated. He's aggravated with them because they just will not, they're stiff-necked. I don't know, maybe he just got fed up.
Once you get stiff-necked, ain't no
time. But obviously he doesn't stop bringing the gospel to the Jews after this. Anything else? I mean, is that totally confusing?
No.
It's kind of just neat the way you can go to the letter to the Thessalonica's, the letter to the Corinthians, the letter to the Philippians. Did we look at the letter to the Philippians during that?
No.
Where he tells them
time.
Yeah. He tells them, you know,
make a note,
if not for you, you know, I would have had to support myself the whole time, but you sent help and allowed me to minister to the word more fully.
I need to write down and mention that next time.
Okay, well, let's